But then we gather at a weird time. I don't even have to pick the low-hanging fruit. I don't even have to talk about the protests at the Capitol and the recall elections and all that. I probably will, but I don't have to. We gather here at a weird moment, a moment that feels very alien to those of us born and bred in the state of Wisconsin. This doesn't feel like Wisconsin. So we live in weird times. You think about how a Supreme Court justice's throat found its way into another's hands. That's weird. And it's not every year that 100,000 people are found in the Capitol Square or that there are 9 recall elections. But I tell you, the thing that struck me as so weird was inspired by all those protesters who were carrying around inflatable palm trees. Because it's weird when you get 100,000 people at the Capitol and you've got a news organization, a news network, running footage with palm trees in the background. And that's the times that we live in. It's weird when millions of people in this country, when they're looking for news, when they're looking for some truth-telling, they turn on Comedy Central. Those are weird times. Well, then I pick up a newspaper article, and I read that there are rural towns in Wisconsin, rural communities, that are tearing up their roads and they're putting down gravel. We're actually returning to dirt roads in Wisconsin. And as somebody who grew up on a dairy farm on a dirt road in Clark County, I always thought of paved roads as progress, and we're going backwards. That's weird. And I hope you don't take this the wrong way, and I sure as hell hope my wife doesn't take this the wrong way, but I found myself laying in bed last night thinking about Tommy Thompson. Now that's weird, and because here's a guy who, I think close to since his birth in 1827, was like Republican leader of the assembly, and went on to become a 4-term governor, Mr. Republican, and yet you got this group called Club for Growth who says, you can't be in our club. You're not enough of a wacko. You're not extreme enough. You're not really a conservative. That is really weird. But amidst all the weirdness, I think we have to remember that we gather here today in 2011, which is the 100th anniversary of the most amazing legislative session ever seen in the state of Wisconsin and probably ever seen anywhere in America. That 1911 session was such a remarkable feat. Workers' compensation was created by the 1911 legislature. Sweeping railroad regulation. Insurance industry reform. The creation of a state life insurance plan. The first progressive income tax anywhere in America was created right here by the 1911 session of the legislature. Vocational and technical education was established, was started by the 1911 legislature. Worker rights were major breakthroughs in worker rights, where you saw maximum work hours for women and children established by that 1911 session. But it is also so important for us to remember that 1911 session was no accident. What happened in 1911 happened because of what happened in the years before 1911. In 1897, the Wisconsin legislature banned bribery. They also eliminated illegal voting and election fraud. But think about bribery. Look at the flag over there, Wisconsin, 1848. For the first half century of our statehood, bribing a public official was perfectly legal. And it was in 1897 that it was criminalized. And then in 1905, corporate election spending and corporate campaign contributions were prohibited. And it was those acts in 1897 and then in 1905 that set the stage, that built the foundation upon which the 1911 session, perhaps the most amazing in American history, was built. And we have to remember that. Bribery was perfectly legal in the first half century of statehood, and then it was banned, and now it is legal again. There were once poll taxes in America, and then they were banned. Now they've been brought back. And you know, in criminal rackets, they talk about paying protection money. Well, what is it but protection money when we see oil and gas interests, the Koch brothers alone, putting more than $1 million into the election of a governor? And we see the two major interest groups that are opposed to the development of wind power put over $1 million into the election of a governor. And then we see that governor deep six about a dozen different wind energy projects around the state. You talk to anybody in this room, you talk to anybody in anybody's living room, and you say, would it be a good idea for us to be more independent of foreign oil? Would it be good for us to wean ourselves from such reliance on fossil fuel? And people across the spectrum are going to say yes. And yet we have public officials who are paid protection money to look out for those interests that are scared to death of wind power, and we have public policy being made that deep six those projects. We had interests pour millions into a campaign for governor. And then we see $800 million in federal rail funds thrown away. Absolutely thrown away. And the interest groups, and Scott Walker's the number one recipient in Wisconsin of road builder money, for example. We saw the road builders say, we shouldn't use the $800 million for rail, we should use it for crumbling roads. And you know, a budget was passed that cut schools by $900 million, that cut health care assistance for the poor and the disabled and the elderly. And yet there's a 15% increase for road construction. And yet we've got local towns tearing up pavement and putting down gravel, because the money is steered to private contractors instead, not to the local road crews that work for the townships and for the counties. That's what we have when this protection money is paid. You can call it what you want. You can call it vending machine politics. You can call it a toll booth democracy. Some people use a fancy word. They call it plutocracy, and hardly anybody in the country knows what the word means. Some even want to use the F word. But I tell you, you know, it's fruitless to use a word like that, because most people can't distinguish between the end result of fascism and the early onset form that you can see before our very eyes. So I think we should just call a spade a spade. What we've got on our hands here is a criminal enterprise. It is a crime. It is a crime when the richest 1% of Americans have more wealth than the bottom 95% combined. It's a crime when the 400 richest Americans have a bigger net worth than half of all Americans collectively. It is a crime that tax policies and economic policies have been put in place that have made that class war and that have made those conditions exist here in America. It's a crime when $800 million in rail funds are thrown away. It's a crime when local road crews are ripping up pavement and putting down dirt. It's a crime when we keep saying, when we have public officials who keep saying yes to the old economy and no to the new economy, and they deep six wind energy projects, and they steer us away from that because you got the oil and gas interests who are afraid of that new economy. Those are crimes. It's a crime that Wisconsin had the biggest per capita cuts in education anywhere in the country. It's a crime that there was no public option debate. There's no Medicare for All discussed in the halls of our Congress. It's a crime. It's a crime that people on Wall Street were too big to jail. It's a crime that we've got pay-per-view congressmen like Paul Ryan. We have to pay to go to a town hall meeting. What we have on our hands is a criminal enterprise. And like all criminal enterprises, you have a criminal syndicate underneath it. And they started out to construct that criminal enterprise. They started out by creating a vast propaganda machine. Big like Fox News, small like Wisconsin Reporter. But they have created a fake media to spread their message. Then they turned to elections, and they've sought to turn them into auctions. They've established all kinds of phony front groups. They've taken the R out of free speech. 1% of the population pays for all, makes all the campaign contributions to all the candidates for office in our country. Less than 1% pay for all of those politicians to be in office. And then the coup de grace, when it comes to what they've done to elections, they bring back poll taxes under the guise of photo identification. Then they turn to the lawmaking process. Then they turn to how they craft legislation. And they establish bill mills like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council out in Washington, D.C., to create model legislation that they shop around to states and they put into effect. And then when those laws are enacted, they turn to the final piece of their criminal syndicate, and that is the takeover of our courts. What used to be the third branch of government, what used to be a check on the power of the other two branches of government, has become a rubber stamp, has become an extension of the other two branches of government. You don't have to look any further than the collective bargaining law, and when it went to court, a lower court ruled that that bill was illegally passed because the legislature ignored the open meetings law. And then you have a state Supreme Court justice, David Prosser, who said that the lower court judge erred by wrongly relying on laws that, and I quote, apply to the legislature except when the legislature says they do not. They created this criminal syndicate with boatloads of money, first and foremost, but also with incredible public relations acumen. One of the things that fascinates me, and I think it's a key to cracking their code, whatever they plan to do, they first accuse their opponents of doing first. It's absolutely fascinating. When they want to set up a propaganda machine masquerading as legitimate news organizations, they squeal for years about media bias. When they want to bring back poll taxes and otherwise rig elections, they spend years squawking about voter fraud. When they want to block any discussion of social and economic justice, progressive taxation, when they want to wage class war, of course, they respond to any talk of progressive taxation or social economic justice by saying, that's class war, that's class war. And when they want to legislate from the bench, when they want to remove the R from free speech, they, of course, talk for years about judicial activism and turn judicial activist into a slur, into an epithet that they hurl at judges. Well, all I can tell you is that if they ever start accusing their opponents of backing socialized castration, men, watch your flies. We are living in such weird times. And because we live in such weird times, I'm going to say something that's going to sound weird to you. the first order of business cannot be tax or economic policy. The first order of business can't be holding Wall Street to account. The first order of business can't be healthcare. It can't be education. It can't be climate change or clean air or clean water. You can't tackle the jobs problem, the budget problem, the tax problem, without tackling the first problem, money in politics. It is corrupt. It is institutionally corrupt. I was not the first to say those last words about tackling the first problem. Would you believe that it was a Republican presidential candidate who said it? A current Republican presidential candidate who said it? I was quoting Buddy Romer of Louisiana. And they keep him out of all the debates. He's the only Republican running for president who's been both a governor and a member of Congress, and they won't let him debate because he says stuff like that. The first order of business has to be recriminalizing bribery, doing away with the new poll tax, rescuing our democracy. That has to be the first order of business. Now, warming up people for Bobfest, I saw Ed blog one day about whether it's time to create a third party. And I know if Hightower were here already, he'd crack wise and he'd say that he'd settle for two. Well, I'm still holding out for one that's worth a damn. All I can say is if there's any kind of movement, any kind of party movement, it needs to focus on the establishment of a first party, not a third, or not a second, a first party. Because we need at least one that doesn't belong to the less than 1% that pay for campaigns. We need one for the other 99%. And I think it's so important for us to be honest with ourselves and accept one truth. The Republican Party could not have done what it has done unless the Democratic Party did what it did a year ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago. The Republican Party would not have become what the Republican Party has become if the Democratic Party did not become what it became. When wackos are in charge, the last thing on earth we need is a bunch of weenies as an alternative. As was the case in Fighting Bob's time, as was in the case in the late 1800s and early 1900s, the question is not which shall rule, Democrats or Republicans. The question is which shall rule, wealth or people. So I have one word of advice to give you. For any of you who are in high school, I have one word of advice for you. For those of you who are a little older than that, I have one word that I want you to share with your children and grandchildren. Our country's future depends on it. Pharmaceuticals. You see, we desperately need somebody to invent a miracle pill, a kind of Viagra for the spine. And then once we have that miracle pill, we gotta get a whole bunch of politicians to take it. And then, if you see politicians with stiff spines and erect posture lasting more than 4 hours, you've gotta call the Capitol switchboard and tell them to take more pills. But until those magic pills kick in, I leave you with this thought. Only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. When that crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around. That, I believe, is our basic function. to develop alternatives to existing policies, to keep them alive and available until the politically impossible becomes the politically inevitable. These are not normal times. Things are so freaking messed up that I lie around in bed thinking about Tommy Thompson and I quote Milton Friedman. But if those ideas are to lie around when the politically impossible becomes the politically inevitable, we can't be lying around now. We've got to take a lesson from the 1911 session of the legislature. What happened in 1911 was no accident. It happened because of what happened in 1897 and in 1905. This is no time for lying around. This is no time for moping. This is no time for despair. This is no time to hang our heads. This is no time to throw our hands up in the air. This is a time for hope. This is a time to dream. This is a time to listen and learn. This is a time to think and teach. This is a time to plot and plan. This is a time to speak and tweet and organize and boycott and march and vote. And if we do those things, then the history that we are here to celebrate will come to pass again, I guarantee you. Thank you.